Well, now to some undoubtedly good news, the seemingly unabated boom in Australian agriculture. Around most parts of the country, farm production has surged, thanks in part to good seasonal conditions and record prices for everything from nuts to the main exports of beef, lamb, grains and wool. But there are other products on the market that I think will surprise you because they are also going gangbusters. Certainly surprised me. Investment in rural properties is also growing and fierce competitive, both at the small and large scale. So perhaps this is a golden era and a rare time for farmers to say that life is good. But could it be even better? Well, my next two guests on Saturday Extra argue that it definitely can. They spoke at a cedar lunch this week that I attended on agribusiness. Michael Whitehead is a farmer and director of agribusiness insights for the ANZ. And just as in other sectors, he's looking to data and analytics to give farming an edge, and he'll explain why. Hello, Michael.
Good morning, Geraldine.
And Dr. Mirjana Perica is the Managing Director of Food Innovation Australia, FAL. It's a government-funded body that fosters commercially driven collaboration in the Australian food and agribusiness industry. Welcome, Mirjana.
Hello.
Michael, perhaps the main way most of us realise that agriculture's booming is when we see how expensive our beef and lamb has become. But the export dollars from commodities, of course, change our whole national economic narrative, don't they? How good are things at the moment?
Look, Geraldine, you said at the start that for once farmers will say that life is good. We always say that life is good in farming. It just can be more challenging at times than
others. It's the complaints.
Absolutely. Look, we could always do with a bit more rain, sometimes a little bit less. In terms of agriculture right now for Australia, it's a $60 billion industry. And about three quarters of that, $45 billion of that is exports as well. Why is it going so well? Because, as we've talked about, the big demand for whether it's our beef, whether it's our wool, whether it's our sheep meat, dairy has its challenges at the moment, but huge demand there. And as you said as well, it's beyond grain. It's nuts. It's wine. It's aquaculture. That demand is there. And at the same time, the new capital investment that's coming in there as well is really bringing more and more innovation, not just to farms, but right through that Australian supply chain.
But you said, and I'll come to Mirjana in just a moment, one of the key things I took away from that briefing at lunch was that Australian agriculture, good though it is full of volatility. And big capital doesn't like volatility. And it's coming in, but it's also stood back. Big capital that occurs in other countries that really takes you into a new sphere. It's stood back, has it not, by and large, from Australian agriculture?
The volatility in Australian agriculture of the world's big agricultural producers, we have greater levels of it here than in most of the other countries. For example, the way that our grain production may go up or down every year, whether it's a perfect year, almost too good as it was last year with huge production, or the droughts that hit us in other years. And look, the same can happen with the animal side of things as well, or the broad acre side too. And you are absolutely correct that investment dollars, and let's say superannuation that has looked for a steady return, has been trepidatious about what the volatility there and what that has meant. The flow of big capital into Australian agriculture has been more institutionally from offshore Canadian pension funds, Northern European pension funds, who are a bigger scale, but who have had more familiarity with Australian agriculture. What is changing now and why we are on the cusp of an exciting new chapter in Australian agriculture is that with both the new capital, what it brings in terms of farm infrastructure and production infrastructure, and the new data analysis and technology, what that does is that it evens out more and more so much of that volatility there. So it can make agriculture more of an attractive return. And the second part of it is that as the investment itself, and whether it's the Australian super funds, family offices, other sources of investment, as they learn more about agriculture, and this investment nag is still only about 10 years old on a major scale, despite the 200 years of Australian agricultural history, as they learn more and the two industries come together, then that will help speed up the investment.
Is that how you see it, Mirjana?
I actually think it's not only the investment on the farm, but I think it's also a connection to the end markets. And I think that's really critical for us. I think we need to really get closer to the end customer, really understand in Australian footsteps. We can't actually begin to understand what the Asian markets want. So we really need to be able to walk in the shoes of people in Indonesia, China, to really develop our products and get a good understanding of what we need to do to be able to make products. So yes, the investment is critical in the country, but it's also we need to be connected to the end customer to really understand what we're making is actually relevant for them.
Because you also mentioned the smallness, like we're used to sort of champions in Australian agriculture, but they're still very small. I mean, there were some amazing statistics, I think, that Michael presented about how few, I think it was 0.4% of people in agriculture employed more than 200 employees. These are small, very good operators. But how do they go and walk in the shoes of the customer?
Well, the only way they can walk in their shoes, obviously, you know, it's investment, it's risky. They're a smaller business, therefore their exposure is greater because they don't have enough reserves. And so the only way they can do is to actually partner with either like-minded businesses or they partner with a larger company who does have the access and the resources and the muscle to enter those markets. And through the collaboration, they obviously have to work through the commercial arrangement. Not only can they invest in innovation, invest in infrastructure and supplying in terms of volume, but they can also de-risk their exposure as well.
But do they want to do something like this? I watched them coming up to the other day, real good old farmers coming up to you, very intrigued by your invitation. Do they take it up?
Well, some do and some don't, and that's the challenge we have in this country. You know, the majority of the businesses are disconnected to their end customer and they're trying to just make enough money to survive today. But there is a cohort of businesses, what we call a business of tomorrow, who is actually connected to their end customer and they're actually working out what do they have to do to be different, and they want to. They've got the appetite. They've got the fire in the belly, and that's really exciting for this country. We really need to get more of those people with the fire in the belly that's going to get them to go out there and find out what they don't know, work out a way of how do they meet that, and it's really going to be some great, exciting times for Australia.
Well, Michael, who would compete with us? You are very important about knowing that we're not in this on our own. We tend to think we are. Who's coming up?
We have big competition. In agriculture for years, Brazil was always going to be the next big thing in world agriculture, and it became the next big thing, particularly in terms of beef. Brazil has very good quality beef, huge amounts of land to grow it on, and is big competition in our markets, as are the Americans. And with the Chinese market just having opened up, reopened to American beef, so many Chinese consumers love the idea of a steak with a small American flag in it. That's going to be great competition. It's a great beef market for us, but we're going to have to continue to lift our game there. Another big competitor on the grain and oilseed side, for example, are the Ukrainians. Fantastic land for Australian farmers who take great delight out of seeing wonderfully productive soil. Ukraine is perfect. It's close to the European market that's important to us, and it has very low input costs as well, and important to the Asian market too. The other big competitor, we talk about China in agriculture. China and China again, what the demand's going to be. China itself is re-emerging as a competitor to us because Xi Jinping himself has said recently that China needs to go back to lifting its domestic production, particularly in dairy and in meat as well, so as to not be so reliant on the imports that we and other markets send in, dairy, meat and others. And as China lifts its domestic game, that becomes a competitor to our imports there. But at the same time, it opens up great opportunities for our innovative agriculture sector to help build that domestic market.
Yeah, you were saying that rather than sort of seeing it as the great dining boom, you said that supplying feedstock to these, to say China, as it builds its herds, might be the priority.
Whether it's feedstock, whether it's dairy cattle to help them rebuild their domestic production there and in other parts of Asia, and whether it's the feed as well for all these cattle who'll be producing the milk, and for cattle in feedlots and other animals who be building domestic meat supplies, they will need the grain and the oil seeds and the other areas to feed them, and we can be a major player there as well.
Now, Mariana, you made the point that people had to think differently, that local local producers had to really think differently. And you said, I'm interested in the value chain. That's what you kept emphasising. How have you seen this happen, or are you just speaking theoretically?
No, I'm not speaking theoretically. Let me share with you a story of a banana grower in Queensland. It's a great example of a company that is actually connected to their own market and really understands the value chain. So they were a banana grower. And it's Natural Evolution Foods. The owner, Rob Watkins, one day accidentally drove over some green bananas. It's actually quite a funny story. Well, not a funny story, an interesting story how it arises. But he was driving them, and as he looked in the rearview mirror, he saw a cloud of dust. And he started thinking, well, I've got typically around 500 tonnes of banana waste a week, either from falling down off the trees or the retailers reject it because it's not the right size or shape. So there's a lot of wastage. And he started to think, I wonder if I could make this into a viable business and produce banana flour. Well, this got him excited. So he started thinking of a way of how he could make the actual banana flour. He was very fortunate. He produced 6 kilograms of his first batch of banana flour, and he was had a family cafe. So he was able to test the actual banana flour with the customers. And as he found out, the banana flour just flew off the shelf, and that got him thinking. And through this process of really understanding the needs of the end user, the people who are making, using the banana flour, he's actually gone off to build a first of its kind in the world, a pharmaceutical grade banana plant. And what's really interesting, a banana flour plant, but what's really interesting about the banana flour, it has some really unusual properties. It's naturally very high in resistant starch, and we all know resistant starch can play a really important role in regulating the blood glucose levels.
This is Mariana speaking as a scientist, which she originally was.
Absolutely. But it's really exciting to see. But not only have they ventured into making, you know, banana flour, but they've also gone into making skin ointments, creams. It's got some really beneficial properties. It stops microbes. It can be antifungal. So it's really interesting how through working with the customer, they've really explored of how they can take the product and produce a range of ingredients for their customers.
And, you know, one of the other surprises that you mentioned, Michael, was the growth in goat production and the two new goat abattoirs. This is in Australia, let alone overseas, because there is a sort of a population now who are very used to goat. I'm intrigued, for instance, about the work you did looking at postcode development, Michael, that you can examine the trading performances of farms based on postcodes, and you can break down in a way who uses data and technology to boost their businesses.
Absolutely. Look, I have to go back to the goat point. Most people won't know that Australia is the world's largest exporter of goat meat. It's small compared to beef, but still a great market and growing. And I know of farmers who are now making more money out of their wild goats than they are off the sheep that they've been raising for generations on their farm. So exciting is that market. In terms of the data, I mean, that is another fascinating piece right across agriculture. And as you say, farmers who may live relatively close to each other, whether we're looking at it in their productivity, the data, the sustainability of their farms and how they can improve that, the profitability of their farms, and using that data across the supply chain to improve their performance. And the one other great thing on data is, as Mariana has talked about as well, data coming back down the supply chain from everyone who buys Australian food in Chengdu or Chongqing off Alibaba, for example. If you take that data, work out what they're going to buy, how they're going to buy it, and then the Australian ag sector can use that customer data to tailor what we do and adapt better to those end markets as well.
Okay, we have two enthusiasts here, which it is. It's really, I mean, it is a very interesting new phase and coming, obviously. And I want to thank you both, Michael Whitehead and Mariana Preeker.
Thank you.
Thanks, Geraldine.
Michael is Director of Agribusiness Insights at the ANZ and a farmer himself. And Mariana is Managing Director of Food Innovation Australia, which is a very interesting new outlet of government.